This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's podcast is all about eye health. We're going to talk to one of America's foremost integrative ophthalmologists. Yeah, they're few and far between, but we have one in Dr. Rudrani Banik, spelled B-A-N-I-K. She has all the conventional credentials. She's a board-certified ophthalmologist. She trained at Brown University, UC Irvine, Johns Hopkins, but she also has specialized training in functional medicine. So she brings together the best of both worlds in what I might term an intelligent medicine approach to eye problems. Her practice is in Manhattan, and she also is engaged in a series of research projects looking at various aspects of ways to improve vision. And she has a subspecialty within neuro-ophthalmology, which means that some of the work she does partakes of migraines, you know, kind of the intersect between vision and neurology and headaches. Yeah, there's certainly an overlap there. So without further ado, here's Dr. Banik. Did I miss anything, Dr. Banik?
No, and thank you so much, Dr. Hoffman, for that very kind introduction. That was very sweet of you. And I'm very, very excited to be here and share with you and your listeners, you know, some tips about eye health, as, and perhaps we can delve a little bit into migraine as well.
Well, great. You know, and also you're active both in the conventional management of eye problems. You operate at New York Eye and Ear Infirmary, which is part of the Mount Sinai Health System here in New York City. But you also see a lot of patients with challenging eye problems, and you like to tackle them. So, you know, first of all, what's a root cause analysis? You talk about it on your website. How does it differ from a usual eye checkup?
So in a regular eye checkup, your ophthalmologist or optometrist will do an eye exam, which is basically checking vision, checking eye pressure, checking the surface, and then taking a look in the back of the eye and then making a diagnosis and then either prescribing something, a medication or a drop, or perhaps recommending surgery or glasses. So what I do is slightly different. If I do see that there's an issue, so let's take, for example, a very common condition, which is dry eye. So if I see that a patient is complaining of dry eye symptoms, for example, scratchiness, blurriness, redness, perhaps crusting of the eyes, and then on exam I find certain indications that their eyes are dry, or perhaps that their tear film, which is the very surface layer of our goes on the surface of our eye, if that's not healthy or if it's unstable, then I'll delve a little bit deeper to figure out why do they have this problem, instead of simply saying, okay, we'll use a drop, or keep lubricating and stay out of your contact lenses. So my approach, it does kind of dig a little bit deeper into the root cause. And so, for example, you know, since we're talking about dry eye, oftentimes the root cause is because the glands within our eyelids, we have tiny little glands in the eyelids called meibomian glands. And we have about anywhere from 25 to 30 glands in each lid. Sometimes those glands are just not functioning properly. and they may not be structurally intact, or they may not be producing oils, healthy oils, to lubricate the surface of our eye. So if I do see that as part of my exam, as part of my testing, then I address it. So it's a slightly different approach.
Indeed. And so what evidence is there that nutrition is applicable to eye problems? Because it's kind of a novel notion. I mean, it's now something that's acknowledged by eye doctors that, for example, in the condition macular degeneration, certain nutrients make a difference. But that's evolved only recently.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. So many ophthalmologists and optometrists have really focused on just one eye condition, which is macular degeneration. And there have been some studies looking at the influence of diet and risks of certain kinds of diets with respect to macular degeneration, either potentially increasing the risk or potentially protecting against vision loss from macular degeneration. But I think many of us in the ophthalmology world are now realizing the importance of other eye conditions in with respect to nutrition. So, for example, most ocular diseases do develop as people get older, and the reason they develop is because of oxidative stress. And oxidative stress happens in all of us. It's actually a normal physiologic mechanism. But what happens is, if there's too much oxidative stress and our bodies can't handle it, basically with antioxidants to neutralize that stress, if we can't recover from it, then slowly our tissues start to get damaged. And eventually, if they're permanently damaged, they start to degenerate, and then the cells die. And so nutrition is so important.
And so the eye, of course, it's not exempt from what happens to all the rest of our organs due to the effects of lifestyle, pollution, and poor diet, lack of exercise, sleep considerations. All these will impact the eye, which is a very sensitive organ, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the eye is, you said it perfectly. I mean, it's so susceptible to all of those things, external as well as internal. So, for example, internal, you can think about blood pressure or blood sugar if someone is diabetic, or cholesterol level. So our eye is very susceptible to all of that type of damage. And each tissue within the eye, so the eye is very delicate. It has many different types of tissues. For example, there's the cornea in the front of the eye, the lens, which helps us to focus, and the retina in the back of the eye, and many other structures in between. Each tissue has an inherent potential to recover from oxidative stress, and some tissues more than others. But what happens is, with cumulative damage over time, our eyes just cannot keep up and just can't continue functioning at a very high metabolic level, which they're used to functioning. And so that's why nutrition is so important. So now I think there's a lot more research being done in terms of dietary patterns and habits with respect to eye conditions. So that includes cataract, what nutrients may potentially protect us from cataracts. It also includes dry eye, how may our diet affect dry eye. And then also glaucoma, and in addition to macular degeneration, which is what we were talking about before. So I think, it's just an emerging area in ophthalmology. So I think within the next probably 10 to definitely by 20 years, we'll understand a lot better about what types of nutritional interventions really can benefit. So again, we're right still at the forefront of all of this. And I'm really excited to see where it goes. But in my training, what I've done is, I have the traditional medical training in ophthalmology and neuro-ophthalmology, but I've incorporated a lot of functional medicine principles into my treatment regimens. And so basically, I'm extrapolating the work that's been done for general medical health, and specifically brain health, and using a lot of those principles to try to promote vision health, because many people actually probably don't know this, but the eye is a direct extension of the brain. Mm-hmm. So basically, whatever, is going on in terms of keeping the brain healthy would potentially benefit our vision as well.
Well, they say that the eye is the window to the soul, but the eye is also the window to the cardiovascular system. It's the window to, as you say, the brain, because changes that are externally apparent in the eye, it's a lot easier than doing a brain biopsy. Or doing, taking a piece of heart muscle out of a person, because you can, dilate the pupil and, use your special devices to look directly at the retina and all these delicate structures within the eye, and they may provide you with feedback about what's going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, the eye is, it's just so readily available in terms of diagnosis, or helping to diagnose all of many different systemic conditions. So I was actually just creating a list today of probably 200 systemic conditions that can be diagnosed based on an eye exam. So, hypertension, diabetes, those are just the tip of the iceberg, but so many inflammatory conditions, for example, sarcoidosis, there are certain infectious conditions like Lyme disease or syphilis. Mm. Autoimmune conditions, even things that you may not think would have a connection with the eye. So, for example, bowel disease, inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, these conditions can have manifestations on an eye exam. So one of the reasons why I love ophthalmology so much is because the eye really is linked to the rest of the body. It's not isolated. And I get to work with many different types of practitioners across the board in managing my patients. So it's really, it's a wonderful collaboration.
Indeed. There's a new phenomenon, which is computer vision syndrome. And it's exacerbated by the fact that, screen time is just astronomical. I check my screen time. I do a lot of my work on a computer, and I get a report every week. And it says, this week you've reduced your screen time by 14 minutes. You only were looking at your screen for 5 hours and 10 minutes this week. That's not so good. Were the eyes really designed to look at brightly lit screens indoors without looking at horizons and greenery and sunlight? I'm not sure that that's very paleo.
No, not at all. So our eyes were really designed to be hunter-gatherers, not to be looking at things up close all the time for prolonged, for hours at a time. So just an interesting statistic, you mentioned, 5 hours of screen time. So the average amount of time that an adult in the U.S. spends on a screen is a staggering 11 hours a day. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And so
doesn't even include the TV time. We're talking about my iPad.
Exactly. And so it all adds up. So again, our eyes were not designed to do that. So there are certain, repercussions of this increased screen time society that we're part of. And part of that is this growing epidemic of myopia. And so myopia
which I am an exemplar of. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was
the first kid in my class to have glasses and braces. I had that ignominy of being, a buck tooth kid with glasses and metal mouth.
unfortunately, you're not alone. I mean, there's many, many people who nowadays, especially children, need glasses at an earlier and earlier age for myopia. And so, there are some theories out there about why, the numbers have gone up so much. So I think in the year 2020, I think it's estimated that 28% of the world's population is myopic. Mm-hmm. And in the year 2050, it's estimated that 50% of the world's population will be myopic. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's crazy to think that. And, part of that, people believe, is because when we're focusing up close, there is a process that happens within a muscle in our eye called accommodation. So we're constantly accommodating when we're looking at something up close, or even at intermediate distance, for example, if we're looking at a computer screen a little further away, that still triggers this accommodation. And with prolonged accommodation, what's thought to happen is that the shape of the eye actually changes. So it gets longer. And that lengthening of the sclera, the white part of the eye, is associated with worsening myopia. Mm-hmm. So perhaps, and there's actually, it's very interesting, there have been some studies done, not in the US, but in some Asian countries, where they looked at children with high levels of myopia or progressive myopia, and they kind of looked at, how much time do they spend indoors versus outdoors, and then what they found was that the kiddos who actually spent more than 2 hours a day outdoors had less in myopia and worsening of progression of myopia than the ones who spent more time indoors. So one of the treatments actually in the ophthalmology community for myopia is tell your kids to go outside and spend more time outdoors, get some fresh air, play some games, look in the distance.
I think I set the stage for that by reading Tolstoy's War and Peace at the age of 11, I think it was, a little too early. It's claimed that you can reverse nearsightedness with certain programs, certain eye exercises, and some people even purport that certain vitamins, nutrients can fix it. You're holistic, but do you have reason to be a little skeptical about those claims when it's pretty advanced?
So I have not yet found any holistic treatments to be effective. I wish I could. Mm-hmm. I've looked.
And that's realistic.
You know, yeah. Yes. And I've read, you know, there's a book that was written by William Bates, ophthalmologist.
The Bates Method,
The Bates Method, which is very popular amongst holistic practitioners. But, you know, I've read it. I've tried to understand it. But unfortunately, it is not mainstream. It's still considered kind of alternative, an alternative approach, meaning substituting for the traditional medical approach. And so, and also in his book, you know, he did have some wonderful kind of suggestions for, you know, relaxing the eyes and improving eyesight, but it really has not panned out in terms of scientific evidence to support that. So unfortunately, once the shape of the eye changes, I wish there were an exercise or some exercise regimen we can do to make it change back, but so far, not yet. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Now, that being said, you know, sometimes people get something as they do get older, they develop something called second sight, where they may not have been able to see very well at a particular distance. And mm-hmm. then gradually over time, all of a sudden, their vision starts to improve. And
right.
some of them even are able to kind of, you know, make do without their glasses or, mm-hmm. you know.
And maybe
you know,
they've
really
been very dutifully doing the Bates Method for the last 3 years, and they notice that there's an improvement. You know, it's
perhaps.
Like, oh my goodness, I turned 50, and, you know, here, you know, it's working, finally.
Exactly. So the reason behind that, you know, that second sight is actually because the lens inside our eye also changes as we get older. It becomes a little bit less flexible. It changes shape. Sometimes it gets a little bit thicker in the middle. And those changes can affect our refractive status, so it may potentially improve our myopia. So, you know, if things are getting better, maybe it's the Bates Method, but more likely it's the lens that's just changing physiologically as we get older.
And so if you start to worry you're not seeing well close, you know, you're what is called farsighted, are you having problems with reading, you need reading glasses, is this a sign that you've been, you know, eating a bad diet or you've had too much oxidative stress? Because it seems to me that it's pretty inevitable. You know, it just seems to be part of the process of aging. Or is it a sign of some premature degenerative process? And, you know, mm-hmm. maybe if we were on healthier diets and, you know, didn't spend so much time peering at objects in dim light, mm-hmm. we wouldn't get it.
Yeah, so this is another myth that a lot of people believe is that you know, people end up needing reading glasses because they're spending too much time looking at things up close or, mm-hmm. you know, there's something in their eyes degenerating and their eyes are getting weaker. In fact, what's happening is it's similar to the lens change I was just talking about with second sight. So as the lens gets stiffer in the eye, it just can't focus as well up close. So it loses its accommodative power. And basically, you know, this condition of needing reading glasses, it's called, in medical terms, it's called presbyopia.
Presbyopia, like Presbyterian. Yeah.
Exactly, like Presbyterian. But in fact, it happens to everyone. And so as, you know, eventually it will happen to everyone. If you live long enough, it will happen to you. So what I tell people is, in terms of eyes, three things are inevitable. Presbyopia, cataracts, and wrinkles. We are all going to get them. Mm-hmm. So if we live long enough. So most people, by the time they're in their 40s, some people can go into their 50s, presbyopia kind of dawns on them, and then they end up holding things a little further away. It's the, you know, my arms just aren't long enough syndrome that starts to happen. And, you know, they need more light, especially if they're trying to read a menu in a restaurant, for example. But this is kind of a natural process that happens as our eye is changing as we're getting older. So don't be too concerned. Get a nice pair of over-the-counter reading glasses. Most people will do very well with those.
So, and what about cataracts? Because a lot of people also look at cataracts as a sign that, you know, maybe they're exposed to too many free radicals. They haven't taken enough antioxidants. Certainly, we know that mm-hmm. Smoking can accelerate the progression of cataracts, and diabetes is associated with cataracts. So, is inevitably, cataracts a sign of you're doing something wrong or you need more antioxidant support?
Not necessarily. So again, it is a natural part of the aging process in terms of the change in the lens. So I'll just explain what a cataract is just briefly. Sure. So a cataract is, so normally the lens inside our eye is clear, it's transparent, similar to a clean window if you're looking out the window. But as we get older, that lens starts to become a little bit opaque. So it becomes a little bit yellowish in color, and then it progresses. And in more advanced cases, it can become brown or rarely even black if it becomes more pacified. And it is absolutely true that one of the reasons why that happens is because of oxidative stress. But there are many other reasons it can happen as well. For example, UVA and UVB exposure, mm-hmm. Perhaps not enough, I was mentioning before, antioxidants in our diet. But basically, it is possible, I think, to retard the progression of cataract by eating a healthy diet. I mean, I wouldn't tell someone not to do it, but the bottom line is it happens to everyone. Mm-hmm. And, it may not be symptomatic until later on. So some people need cataract surgery earlier, but others can wait until they're in their 70s, 80s, even 90s. I have some patients who are not bothered by this lens change until they're into their ninth decade or even into their hundreds. So,
it's not a very big deal. It's not like, oh my goodness, you're too old to get cataract surgery. You're too fragile. We'll just let your eyesight, deteriorate. It's fairly mm-hmm. Easy these days to accomplish cataract surgery using newer high-tech methods, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very straightforward procedure. It's probably the most, it's the number one elective surgery done in the world. Mm. But there are considerations. So, for one to have cataract surgery, they need to be healthy. They need to be able to undergo, even though it's a straightforward procedure, they need to have medical clearance and be able to undergo some mild sedation in some cases. So, it's a very effective procedure, but not necessarily for everyone.
Okay. Now, there is, again, in the holistic realm, and I think you're sort of a crossing guard in this regard. I think you evaluate everything on its merits. You're very open, unlike some doctors who are trained conventionally. I think you're very open to alternatives. There's the belief that you can, if you have cataracts, you can avert surgery by using certain eye drops. In particular, I think they're carnosine eye drops. They're mm-hmm. touted in articles on the World Wide Web, and with some research that suggests that they really dissipate cataracts. What's your candid opinion of that?
So I don't think the research is quite there yet. If it truly worked, everybody would be buying these drops, and whoever was manufacturing them would be a billionaire many times over. And, we would basically eliminate the need for cataract surgery. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's simply not what we're seeing. That being said, there are some other compounds that are being investigated.
I've read that there's some things that are plausible, future. But these are not over-the-counter. They're not vitamins. They're not supplements. They're very sort of molecularly engineered compounds that actually attack the cataracts. Tell us about that.
Yes. So that what you're alluding to is there were some studies done in rodent and an animal model where they had diabetic cataracts, and they applied this compound, and I'm blanking on the name. I believe mm-hmm. it's inosine, but don't quote me on that. Okay. And they had a drop formulation of this that they applied, and they found that it basically dissolved their cataracts. Hmm. But what happened was when they tried to use this compound on humans, it really did not translate. So yeah. there was some disconnect there. It seemed to work in a basic science in a lab, in an animal lab model, but not necessarily in humans. So there's some other things maybe that need to be tweaked in terms of physiology or route of administration. I'm not sure, but I do think along with some of the other conditions that I've talked about, I think that over the next decade or so, we're going to see some pretty big advancements in these areas in terms of reversing or curing presbyopia, in terms of reversing or curing cataracts. So there is absolutely hope for people, to improve their vision without surgery, for example.
So that's exciting. All right. Well, there's so many other conditions that I want to tackle with you. We have at our disposal an expert on eye problems. She's both conventionally trained as well as receiving specialized training in functional medicine. So she approaches this problem from an intelligent medicine perspective. We'll return to our discussion of eye health with today's guest, Dr. Rudrani Banik. And Dr. Banik, before we sign off for part one, can you give us your website? So because there's lots of resources
sure.
there.
Yeah. Sure. So my website is my full name, which is www.rudranibanikmd.com.
It's spelled phonetically, but spell it anyway.
Sure. It's Rudrani, and my last name, Banik, B as in boy, A-N-I-K-M-D.com.
Very cool. All right. When we return, more on eye health. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.